And David just like lounged in the chair holding the microphone. You are able to do as well.
I'm a sitter upper. I prefer, this is how I drive literally every day.
Okay, so you have good posture.
Yes, I value good posture.
Okay, perfect. You know, do you carry a book on your head to test your posture?
Sometimes it's fun to do that.
Is it? So, is it fun?
Honestly, it's a fun challenge.
Okay.
Everybody should try it.
Should they though? Yes.
At least once, right?
Is it for your model walk?
Do I practice that too sometimes? Maybe.
Okay.
At 5'1", I don't think I'm getting any modeling opportunities.
Okay. You did not go
and
for
40 years old.
America's Next Top Model. No. <Yeah. laughs> You know, I've only seen a few episodes, but I don't think they have many 40-year-olds on there. I'm sorry.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
So. Maybe in my next life, right?
Maybe. Good luck. All right, welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast, where we're exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff with me, not as always, but as a special guest, Sarah Page here. Yeah. Do you have a title at your school?
Yes, I am Sarah Page, behavioral instruction or instructional coach for behavior, or behavior instructional coach.
Okay, you got to work on that.
Yes, I know.
School's starting.
Like,
yes,
a million different ways to say it, but basically, I'm a teacher. Is what I've been telling people.
You're a teacher.
Yeah, so I work 80% of the time with teachers, helping to coach them on better classroom practices, and 20% of the time on helping kids in crisis or kids that are struggling with behavior, teaching them some stuff and ways to cope and things like that.
Okay. We're also friends, so that's exciting too. Yes. Yeah, Sarah and I have gone on 2 mission trips with our high school youth together to Alaska and to Nashville.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's exciting.
Yeah.
Plus, I own a thing in our backyard that your family gave to us for my boys to play in.
Maggie Mountain is what we used to call it.
Yeah. So there you go. And so you are now across the street from the church.
Yes.
All right. So you're very, very close.
Yes, which is very exciting, actually.
Yeah.
It's nice.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on the new position.
Thank you.
I hope it's a great school year. But I invited you on to kind of talk about faith in schools and to get your perspective as a teacher and things like that. And we've got a couple things to kind of look at and some personal questions too.
Sure.
To kind of give that information. But before we get there, we like to go through a little news story here. So let me ask you, what do you say when you answer your phone?
Hello.
Yeah, that makes sense, right? Maybe hi, you know, like, or some.
Sometimes Sarah Page.
Sure. Okay. Okay. You know? That's, I guess if that's like an unknown number or an expected number, you know, you don't want to be.
Or like my work phone.
Okay. Yeah. The work phone. Mm-hmm. Sure. Okay. You also have plenty of experience working with Generation Z.
Yes.
And me too. And I'll say this. This is from Business Insider. They say this. Gen Z does not want to say hello when answering the phone.
What?
I mean, I don't call any members of Gen Z often.
I don't even know what to say to that.
They don't say anything. It's not like they have a new greeting. It's a nothing. They sit in silence with the expectation that the caller breaks the silence.
Well, how do they know that the phone is connected? Like that the call has been connected?
That's a great question.
Well, I mean... Or are they FaceTiming most of the time? That's what I kind of see a lot of the kids doing. Rather than calling, they're FaceTiming. So they just, their face shows up and you know that they're there. Maybe?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It feels like the hello is the signal that I'm here, right? Like that's, like it's not even just necessarily like a politeness issue. It's just kind of like, yes, I am receiving transmission.
Yes.
Right? Like.
Did you know that was, I believe if I'm getting my history correct, Thomas Edison, like, came from him.
Okay.
So like that was just like a way to say, is anybody there or is the call connected? So.
All right. What do you think? Why would Generation Z be
doing this? I can tell you right now, they're terrible with all communication skills. So if I'm in the hallway and they're walking down the hallway and I say, hi, nothing.
Okay.
Just silence.
So socially awkward.
Yes.
They all have
COVID kids, man.
COVID/cell phone.
/iPad kids.
Combined with both those things that they don't know how to communicate beyond a screen.
Yep.
Maybe. all right. So 2 reasons that people have gave for this.
Okay.
Okay. Number 1, too many telemarketers or robocalls.
Okay.
And so they oftentimes telemarketers or robocalls don't start until they hear someone say hello. So this is like the workaround.
Okay.
I'm more of the boat of just don't answer the phone.
Yeah, let it go to voicemail. Yeah, if it's important enough, somebody will leave a voicemail.
Agreed. Like, that's more of my camp. If you're concerned about telemarketers or robocalls. So, but this is a reason. All right. There's another reason, and that's the change in etiquette. And that's the expectation of you called me, so you have to break the silence.
What?
Yeah.
I hate it. I hate it so much. What? I'm rarely speechless, but here I am. Yeah.
Like a Gen Zer when you answer the phone.
Right?
Just speechless. Yes.
I wonder if they've ever seen the, you know, in old movies, they'd be, talk to me. Like when the people would answer
sure.
the phone.
Yeah.
I say old, like from the 90s.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Do people even answer the phone in movies these days, or is it all just text? Right. Yeah.
Have you also noticed that the teenagers answer pretty much, if they are going to answer a phone call, it's on speakerphone. Like, I had to teach my girls to hold the phone up to their ear.
Yeah. You know.
They didn't know how to do that.
For me, it's like, do you want everyone like in on your business?
Yeah.
You know, like in on the whole conversation versus just half of a conversation.
But most of the kids have never used a landline, and that was the only option for a landline.
That is correct. So yeah. And maybe this is just like, they've never had experience using a phone. Mm-hmm. They've only had a cell phone, and this is so in the new cell phone era, this is how you do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy town. This is nuts.
So strange.
They also compared this to what the author here compares to the Gen Z stare, and this is when you go into a business, like you go to Chipotle and a Gen Zer is behind, and they don't say like, hi, or what can I get you, or anything like that. They wait for you, the customer, to start.
And that drives me nuts. Same thing with AirPods in the ear of these Gen Zers that are working at these places. I'm like, excuse you.
Agreed. I feel like this is just like a bit of common courtesy.
Yeah.
And like also, you know, if you're working for tips, like this just feels like
right.
a little bit of like politeness goes a long way when they turn that screen around for you.
Right.
On what percentage number you're going to press.
Yes.
You know, I feel like that's part of it. All right. So are you going to adopt this? Or are you going to stop saying hello when you answer the phone?
I don't think I could ever break that habit. It's like so ingrained in who I, like.
It's also crazy town in my opinion.
And also it's crazy. Yes.
Like especially if I called somebody and it stopped ringing and there was nothing. Like, I wouldn't just like assume the person would answer. I'd assume there's something wrong.
Yes. I would assume that the call did not go through or it dropped or that there was I was on mute.
Or you get some awkward thing of me being like, hello? You know, like in a completely unnatural voice because I don't know what's happening. Right. Like, you know, and nobody needs to hear that.
Right.
So Gen Zers, I know you're not listening to this podcast. But if your mom or dad is and you're in the car, say hello when you answer the phone.
Make them answer grandma's calls from now on.
You're a teacher. You got to get in on this.
Yeah, for sure. I'm going to have to ask around with my daughter's friends and things like that. Wow.
All right. Let's get to our main topic here. So I've got a couple of news stories for us, YouTube. But first, I just want to kind of go through like, what does it mean to be like a Christian educator and how do we navigate this in the public school setting?
Yeah.
I'm a public school kid. I went to public school. I went to private school through fifth grade and then public school till I was a senior. And then I went to private Christian university. So no big deal.
Right. Okay, Richie Rich.
I'm still paying off those loans.
You're right. Same.
So, So what is it, you know, just give me... Yeah. Maybe some thoughts on what it means to be like a Christian educator in 2025.
Sure. Well, on one hand, we live in the Bible Belt. So
we do.
Being a Christian teacher here is a lot easier than maybe some other parts of the country. Most of my students are either Christian or have no religious affiliation.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's on that side, it's easier than I guess other places. But on the other hand, there has been a huge shift away from religion, in the last 20 years. I feel like, at least outward religion, I should say. And so with that, I feel like I've got to be careful that I don't cross a line. If I know that a student is Christian and that their parents are Christian and they ask me to pray for them, of course I say yes, you know, or pray with them or ask for advice in that realm, I'm happy to give it. But I do have to be careful with the ones I don't know as well.
Sure. You know? Yeah, I think that's good insight. I think the idea that ultimately the healthiest way to approach this is like, you're not outwardly showing or even saying like, I'm a Christian and here's the Christian point of view of all these types of things, but like it's an undeniable part of who you are and what you, how you see the world through that lens. And it's an, you know, people of faith, like it informs every part of your decision, or at least it should, you know, and that's like what we ultimately hope to gain as a church or as a community here. But at the same time, you, in the public atmosphere, it's not appropriate to talk about for everything in every situation.
Exactly.
So I'm sure that's a challenge to do, especially there are some outspoken people within the Christian community in the public space. And you're like, well, I don't want to be like that.
And that was the other side of the coin.
Yeah.
The other part of it is that while it would be easy to, you know, talk more about my religion as an educator, I also am apprehensive too, because I don't want to be lumped in with those that have hurt others in the name of religion. I don't want to ever be or seem unapproachable to students because they think, oh, she's going to judge me if I tell her that I made a mistake, or she's not going to love me as much if I, you know, tell her that I, you know, did something.
Yeah, sure. Especially, you know, as like pronouns or, you know, issues on sexuality kind of come into the picture. You're at a middle school. So, I mean, that's not outside the realm of possibility.
Oh, I've had it every year. Yeah. I've had at least one interaction like that. Yeah. So,
and there are quite a lot of Christians out there that I'm sure kids walk away from being like, that was a incredibly difficult and painful experience.
Yeah.
And that person is wearing the badge of, you know, Christianity.
Absolutely.
Quite proudly and boldly.
Yes.
And so like that is, I'm sure that's a challenge as well to like navigate those two things. So,
and as well as everything in the news and politicians and things like that.
So, what are, you know, some challenges you kind of see over the course of like your career as a teacher and educator that are kind of growing or more are becoming bigger challenges for parents and schools these days that weren't as big when you started?
Challenges just in general or with regards to religion?
You know, whatever you want to take that, you know.
Well, challenges in general, the phone crisis is what I call it. Just the screen crisis. The kids are so glued to these screens these days. Parents are using them as babysitters and for everything. And it is rewiring our kids' brains.
Yeah.
And it's so sad to see. I when they passed the law banning cell phones in Texas, I was so happy.
Yeah.
Just so thankful that these kids would finally get the opportunity to interact the way we did when we were kids, you know, the genuine conversations.
Sure.
I was talking to a kid in the grocery line, actually. She was bagging my groceries. And she's like, what do you think about the cell phone thing? She saw I was wearing a teacher shirt. And I said, I think it's fantastic that you guys are getting that opportunity, because at the end of the day, this is the last time you guys are going to be in this place with these people. I actually got that from you from the Alaska mission trip. I remember you saying that. It's the last time you're going to be in this place with these people and have the opportunity to have conversations and make memories with these people. Nobody is going to remember the TikTok video you showed them at lunch. Nobody's going to remember the meme that was sent in the group chat. What they're going to remember is genuine experiences and conversations.
100%. I mean, look, I've scrolled through Instagram reels. I'm not a TikTok person. I'm too old, I think. Also,
never too old for TikTok.
And also, I don't need another thing on my phone to be a distraction. But I can definitely say I've scrolled through reels and I look down. I'm like, wow, 30 minutes have passed. I remember truly nothing. Not one thing that I've seen I can recite. And yet I did it for 30 straight minutes.
Yep.
And to think like that is happening to all of our kids out there. Like that's, and it's a dopamine thing. Like they're just so yes. drawn to it. To like, this is feeding something. And yet I remember nothing. I grow in no way. Mm-hmm. And I got to see the next video.
Yeah. And as an yeah. educator, teaching is just getting harder and harder and harder because we're competing with those constant hits of dopamine, you know, those, that constant yeah. Excitement or newness. And so, I mean, I was a history teacher for the past 5 years and I was a very engaging teacher. I dressed up, I did stupid history raps and all kinds mm-hmm. of stuff. And I was struggling still to keep their attention and excitement yeah. and engagement. And so that's a struggle that teachers, it's only going to get worse as these apps get more, the algorithms get stronger and stronger sure. to where it's giving the kids exactly what they want to see, what they're yeah. interested in. And then we're trying to educate them and it's hard.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. So that's definitely, you know, something that
yeah.
all society needs to be aware of, yes. like that this is a thing that yeah. you know, we're kind of experiencing and growing through.
Mm-hmm.
And I know like it's tough right now because like I didn't have a cell phone when I was a kid, I didn't have access to one, and yet our kids do have access to one. And so like that is part of the challenge, is like I am parenting a way that I've never actually experienced as a child. Uh-huh. So like, you know, so maybe, and I can't necessarily say the next generation is going to get it right. I mean, they can't mm-hmm. even say hello on the phone. Come
right.
on. So like, but you know, I think that that is going to be an evolutionary challenge for us yeah. as a species.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So that's a struggle. And then, you know, just, with the advent of social media, just the widespread, sharing of information as quickly, yeah. For better or for worse, but that impacts our kids absolutely. A ton.
Yeah.
So
one of the things I thought, and I want to get your opinion on this, is like kind of a growing both like political and societal like diversity.
Yes.
Where it felt like, I mean, I was a teenager in the 90s, so it's my perspective is, you know, flawed, but it felt like we at least all kind of like agreed on some basic principles.
Yes.
And now it seems when I interact with teenagers or look at the world, like we can't even agree on basic principles.
Yeah.
Including like the world is round. It seems like something, or should we trust people who are smart on these things that require people who are smart?
Yes.
Like it just feels so different.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure. I mean, maybe we would trace this back to like the civil rights era where we had just such a competing point of view coming together in a public school. And the public school might be the only place where all these yeah. competing points of view are just kind of present.
Yeah.
And having to navigate how to teach all of them mm-hmm. without telling people like, I think you're just banana cakes for believing that.
Yes. Right.
Like, I'm sure is a challenge.
Yes.
So how do you navigate this kind of like growing, I don't know,
diversity,
yeah. or this growing like gap mm-hmm. of diverse, you know, in thought it yes. is shocking. Like,
yeah. So, first and foremost, my job as an educator is to make sure kids are safe.
Yeah.
When they come into the school, our job as teachers is to keep them safe and to make sure that they are taken care of, both their mental well-being, physical well-being, all of that. And so thinking about that, I really do have to make sure that I am not taking sides when a kid says that the earth is flat and here's why, because they yeah. saw a TikTok.
Sure.
Or, you know, any other conspiracy theory or anything like that. But at the end of the day, just number one rule in my classroom is you're going to be respectful. You can disagree all you want. You can disagree with me. You can argue with me, but you're going to do it respectfully. I'm going to respect you. You're going to respect me. Same thing with all your classmates. And just really intentionally teaching respect, I think, is the only way
yeah.
to close this gap, because you can be on either side of the aisle on any topic and still be respectful and still listen and still gain insight into why that person maybe does feel that way. So, it's, it's all about just making sure that they feel welcome to share those ideas and to have discussion, even when it's really difficult to say, what are you talking about? You know,
sure.
It's you don't want to cut somebody off, because then that just makes the gap even wider.
Sure.
So I really, that's how I've always done it, especially, you know, I teach history. So it's, yeah. There's a lot of rewriting of history going on right now. So it's always been a struggle with that.
Okay.
So, yeah. When I taught elementary, it was a little different, you know.
Sure.
They were just parroting what their parents said. Mm-hmm. And as they, you know, I would just say, oh, okay. You know, it was a lot easier, because then they would get distracted and run off and do something else.
Sure. But yeah.
Junior high, they're parroting what their adults at home say, but then they're also trying to find themselves.
Yeah.
So it's a good opportunity to help them learn to broaden their,
sure,
their horizon.
Plus, as they scroll through Instagram or TikTok, they're just getting whatever the algorithm is kind of giving them. Yes. They watch one video and all of a sudden that's
all they get.
It's leading them in a very clear direction. It is tough. I mean, like, I can tell you right now, like, as an adult, I watched one political video from an opposing point of view, and then for 2 weeks, that was it. And I was like, block, unfollow, block, restrict everything I saw, and it was still just coming through.
Yep.
So I can't imagine what it's like if you're not cognizant of it.
Of how algorithms work.
Or two, like, you're not, like, actively fighting against it.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
And I'm like, I mostly just want fail videos.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And cute cats and things
like that. And magic tricks. Yes. That's all I actually want, but this is what I'm getting.
Yeah.
And
as a sidebar, I think it's absolutely bonkers that parents are telling educators that they're indoctrinating their children while also allowing them to have free rein on apps like TikTok and Snapchat. And
sure.
Like,
that is definitely the question here. Yeah. So,
am I the one indoctrinating, or is your unfettered use of social media, you know?
So, are you indoctrinating kids? Let's get to it. Let's get the hard hitting questions here. Miss Sarah Page. Yes.
If anything, I am trying to indoctrinate them with the idea of respect and love for each other and for humankind and for not just believing something that somebody said, always going to the root, the primary source, especially as a history teacher. I'm like, primary source, is that from a primary source? Can you show me your primary source? Oh, well, I saw this on TikTok. That's not a primary source. Well, ChatGPT told me that's not a primary source.
Yeah.
So just that's how I combat that. Because if I had time to indoctrinate, like truly indoctrinate kids, like I would, that's a full-time job. Because kids don't want to listen to adults. Like,
sure.
Anyway, you know?
Absolutely.
So no. Teacher, there is no teacher out there indoctrinating children in the way that it's been put out there.
Agreed. And like, look, the first indoctrination would be wearing deodorant.
Yes.
Please. And so like, that would be basic hygiene would be number one on the indoctrination list.
Yeah. And number two, saying hello when you answer the phone.
That's true. That's true. I mean, I know that is often kind of a fear of some subset of Christians' parents, but my kid through elementary or, you know, in our church group thinks one thing, they go to public school or they go to college and they come back thinking something else. I feel that is more about their being exposed to a virtual or diverse group of people and thought, and as maybe a church community or even as one of the things that we've not done a good job of teaching is how to handle a diversity of thought.
Yeah.
And what do you do in those situations? I don't think that's indoctrination. I think that is just, that's what happens when you're exposed to diversity of thought.
Yeah.
Like some of it's going to seep in and some of it's not. And
if
I'm a Christian, the hope is you're doing that in the opposite direction, right? Like your kids who in public schools are influencing their kids with Christian ideology and Christian ideas in the same way that they're being influenced.
Yeah. Going off of that, one of the things right now, the hot button issues is the Ten Commandments in the classroom in Texas here. You know, there's a requirement, it's a law that we post the Ten Commandments in every classroom, a certain poster size. If we receive donations, by the first week of that law, we'd receive donations, you know.
Sure.
Who'd have thunk? But for me, as a Christian parent, I don't want anybody else teaching my child about our faith except for my chosen faith leaders.
Yeah.
So even though I'm a Christian and a lot of people believe in, you know, bringing the Bible back into school and the, you know, prayer in school and all that, I've never believed in that because I don't want anybody but our faith leaders at our church doing that, because there's so many different flavors of Christianity, so many different doctrines and understandings of the text that it's so personalized. I think that opening that door is very, very dangerous.
It's a great segue here. You know, I definitely would say like, yeah, I don't trust teachers because they're going to convince my kids that what they believe is wrong. So I'll make them teach them about religion. Seems counterintuitive. Like, it just seems like that feels like if you don't trust your teachers already, why would you trust them to teach these things?
Exactly.
Like, it seems performative. It just seems, I can assure you, as a student in public schools, my life was not changed by a poster on a board. So putting the beyond an understanding of those values being upheld by my school, by my society, like that mattered far more than a framing of a picture.
Exactly.
Those things. All right. Well, let's get into first. This is from the Associated Press. The public holds nuanced views on the role of religion in public schools. All right. And so this is mostly talking about the idea of, should religious chaplains be provided as a support service in public schools? That is a thing that you can do in Texas. Now, last year, myself and our associate pastor, Pastor Cassandra, went to like a thing put on by the district for religious leaders, and the superintendent of Conroe ISD said they're not really interested in doing that. That was last year. I have no idea if things have changed.
Well, a lot has changed. We have a new superintendent.
Okay.
Well, we have an interim because ours went to a different district.
Well, there you go. So I can't, you know, this was last year. You know, a lot has changed, it looks like. Mm-hmm. But I was thinking, like, what does the public think? All right. So this is from the Associated Press. This is their polling. 58% of adults think it should be allowed. Religious chaplains providing social support in public schools.
Wow. Nationwide?
I mean, I don't know their exact polling here.
Okay.
You know, show me the primary source is what you're asking, right?
I was going to say, is it like a poll by?
This is the poll by APNORC. I don't know what that means.
NORC,
but
me either.
Okay.
Okay. So, well, but it sounds like the N is probably national. So, yeah.
Yes. All right. So, 58% think that this should happen. Obviously, white evangelical Christians are the greatest proponent of this. Mm-hmm. And no religious affiliation, only 40% there. White evangelical Christians say up to, got to zoom in, my eyes are not as good. 82% think that chaplains should be there. What do you think? Should chaplains be in public schools?
Okay, so on one hand, I think, you know, if a parent wants to sign off for their child to be able to talk to a religious chaplain and one is available.
Yeah.
And so I think about like how social services come on campus to help do like counseling sessions with some students. Well, sure, you know, like if that sounds great. Why not have more resources available? But on the other hand, I think it just opens so many possibilities. And like, are these chaplains going to be trained the same way as we are in like the specific safety protocols in our school? Are they, who is going to be with them? Because, you know, safety wise, you need three people in a room at all times. So who is going to be that third person?
Yeah.
How are we going to staff that? I'm thinking from a logistical point of view, what that would look like, but also is there going to be a chaplain for every religion and every denomination available? Because if not, then what about that kid that doesn't have that representation? Is that fair to them? So I just, it's hard. I'm kind of, you know, caught between, you know.
So thing, okay, I don't necessarily think that there should be religious chaplains in school, but a thing that I at least can take heart in from the polling here is I want to recognize that kids are not just like little brains we send to school to be fed information, that they have physical needs, mental needs, social needs, and spiritual needs. Like all those things are there. And I think a question of how does our public school fill those needs is a reasonable question. So when I think of like kids have physical needs, I'm very much a supporter of like, let's make sure kids are well fed, that they're getting meals so that they are ready to learn. Social needs, I think like oftentimes when we think of like when you're adding stuff to like a kid's plate as a student in elementary school or middle school, like what's getting cut are kind of the social needs, like recess or extracurriculars, or they no longer become like a social need, they're becoming like a job. Like if you are in band, it is like not a fun thing anymore. It's like
it's another job.
It's like a full-time thing where like you can't do the things you like anymore because I have band. And not say that kids aren't getting value there, but it just feels like that's just a, again, that's very different than when I was in high school. You could just do band because you think it's fun, not because we are going to win state marching.
And
if we don't, we failed. You know, like
the competitiveness of it all is wildly different than it was when we were kids.
Or that you were allowed to like bounce around and like what makes me happy was more of like a thing that you could do. Like I want to just try out for basketball and then band or then newspaper. And now you really just can't do that.
You have to specialize starting at age three or you're not making a team.
So I do can appreciate that there's a question that like, yes, children have spiritual needs. That's a thing. And I think even if you are a white evangelical Christian or an agnostic member of our community, kids have needs that are not just mental, you know, that are there. And the hope is that they're finding places for those needs to be met. And but now the question is like, is public school the best place for that need to be met? And I don't think the answer is yes.
Yeah. And I'd have to agree with you.
Because
that's, where are we becoming parents now as educators? Like, are we, is it our role to parent, you know, the whole child, or is it supposed to be a partnership where parents do some part and educators do others?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that, that this is definitely a part of that. All right. Well, I'll give you another one here.
Okay.
Teachers leading a class in prayer. Overall, 44% think it should be allowed. So we're less than Christian counselors. Again, white evangelical Christians, 72% think this should be allowed. Religiously unaffiliated, 16%.
1,000% no. Absolutely not. Never in a million years would I be okay with that.
Agree completely.
Like what? No, that's that. When we're a community, you know, like there's different parts of the community. There's a hospital that takes care of your medical needs. There's, you know, the school that takes care of your educational needs. And that's the role of the church is to provide that kind of education and that kind of support. Yeah. But I just don't, school cannot be a one-stop shop for, to raise your kid.
Yeah, this definitely feels like I'm outsourcing religion to my teachers, to our public school system. And I think that like none of the kids, are they Christians? One, are they my kind of Christian? Two, you know, and so what is this prayer going to do? Like asking a non-believing teacher to lead their class in prayer, even for like the Christian students, I feel does far more harm than good.
Absolutely.
Like, so even if you're like, I want my kid to experience prayer in school, like, I don't think that that is a good way to experience that prayer.
No, but then send them to a Christian school, like, or homeschool them, or, you know, like public school cannot be everything for everybody.
It's,
it's impossible. It's completely impossible. And it's just the more we pile on, the worse the education gets.
Agreed. It feels like, from my perspective, a branch of Christianity is saying like, hey, we want Christianity in schools. but I don't want my kid to go to that school anymore because there's no Christians there. And I don't want my tax dollars to go to that school. But I still want Christianity there. And so I will use the legislative arm of the government to make that happen without myself, my child, or my tax dollars doing it.
Yeah.
And that just seems like
indoctrination.
That seems like indoctrination. Yeah. All right. I know you got to go. So I got one more thing here I just want to talk about. And that's this. In Idaho, a teacher had a "everyone is welcome here" sign, told to take it down. She refused. And then ultimately she resigned.
Yeah.
And
this has been a struggle for many teachers in many classrooms in many schools across the country. If you're an educator, you're most likely on teacher Instagram or teacher talk, you know. And so we gravitate towards each other. So we talk a lot about our struggles. But this has been an issue for several years now, especially since these kind of posters, it used to be understood. We didn't have to say everyone's welcome, but now with as polarized as things have gotten, it does feel like we have to let kids know that, hey, you're welcome here too. You don't fit the mold of, you know, everybody else in this room, but you're welcome here too. And I think that it's such a tragedy that teachers are now scared to put up decorations that welcome kids, you know?
Yeah, this is, again, from my perspective, bananas. Mm-hmm. Like, this is like the basics of public school is every child in that district is welcome at a public school. Yeah. That's what public school
That's
is
what the
for.
Word public. Yeah. Like, anybody can come.
Everyone is welcome at that school who lives in that district. Yes. That is part of it. And so to have a sign that, I mean, obviously it's not just like legislatively, you're allowed to be here. This is more of like, and because you're welcomed in by the school, we're making a welcoming environment for you. Mm-hmm. And that is a political thing. Seems crazy to me.
Yes.
This seems, again, basic humanity. Mm-hmm. Saying that this is a political statement or this needs to be removed. For me, this is like saying, like, when I was a kid, like a cat hanging from a tree poster that said, hang in there. Like that is like a political statement.
Right.
Like,
don't tell me what to do.
Yeah. Like, aren't that like, it's a nothing, like that is not the, it's not a political statement.
No, it's
it
not.
Is a reasonable statement of this is what making sure people feel included and valued and respected should be something we all strive for.
Exactly. It's everyone is welcome.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, hang in there. We're all in this together. This is the same thing.
Yeah.
It's virtually the same poster, different decade, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's definitely that. And it's really sad that this has become a fight. Mm-hmm. I feel really awful for this teacher in question that, I mean, I respect her for refusing to take it down.
Yeah.
I mean, ultimately she resigned. I mean, I think that's probably for the best for her own mental health and and safety,
but then that's her career.
That's one less. And that's also, it's hopefully one less good teacher for our kids in Idaho who want to welcome in students and tell them that they're valuable and then give them education.
And loved, which isn't that the whole, you know, religion thing? Aren't we supposed to do that as Christians?
And yeah, bowing to anybody who says like not everyone is actually welcome is the one thing I would say like we should never do.
Yeah,
like
100%. Like
that, and then our public schools should fight against that. Mm-hmm. They said it's like political speech. I mean, there's an American flag in the classroom, I presume, and that is political speech. I mean, like
we say the Pledge of Allegiance.
That is far more political than this, and I. Should you have American flag in the public classroom? I think yes. I don't necessarily think it should be in church, but I think it should be in the public classroom because it's an American public school.
Yes.
But this, I don't know. This really just made me sad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's an unfortunate place that we're in education. My hope is that there's a turn, there's a breaking point, you know, that we can start, you know, the repair of the public education system and the war against teachers. I'm hopeful that things start to swing. I don't know what the catalyst to that is going to be.
Yeah.
But that's my hope. And you know, my hope is that every teacher, despite all of the trials that they're going through, keeps fighting the good fight and has a great year with these kids.
Agreed. Yeah. This feels like the discourse on diversity is we're back into like the civil rights era.
Yep.
And screaming at like a little black child while she walks to an elementary school.
Yep.
And like we're swinging back into that direction and back that way. And it felt like things were getting a lot better. And things were moving in a more positive, healthy direction where at least we could agree on reality.
Mm-hmm.
And even if we disagreed politically, we were able to navigate together as a country.
Exactly.
And now it just, what is the breaking point? I don't know.
Yeah.
But that is a challenge and for you and your fellow teachers. So
yes.
Here at the Beyond Sunday podcast, we pray over you and wish you well. So
thank you.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. If you want to let us know what you thought, our email is beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com. And we'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday. Thank you so much, Sarah.
Thank you for having me.
Taking time for your lunch break to come over here and talk to us. Yeah. All right. Have a great day back at school.
All right. Thanks.
All right. Bye.
Bye.